Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the program, we have stories from Ashley Thompson, Phil Dierking, and Kaveh Rezai. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and we will close the show with our program, Everyday Grammar. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte has ordered troops to seize and occupy unpopulated islands that his country claims in the South China Sea. Duterte said that he may visit a Philippine-controlled island in the sea to raise the national flag. "The unoccupied, which are ours, let's live on it," Duterte told reporters Thursday during a visit to a military camp in Palawan near the disputed waters. "It looks like everyone is making a grab for the islands there," he continued. "So we better live on those that are still unoccupied. What's ours now, we claim it and make a strong point from there." Duterte's plan is likely to anger Chinese officials. China claims almost all of the South China Sea. China, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, Brunei, and Vietnam claim all or parts of the sea. This has led to disputes between China and some of its neighbors. Each year, an estimated $5 trillion in trade passes through the waterway. Duterte's comments came just before the opening of talks between the presidents of China and the United States. The two leaders, Xi Jinping and Donald Trump, are meeting in Florida. China's claims in the South China Sea were to be among the issues discussed. The U.S. State Department did not comment on Duterte's comments. However, in the past, it has urged countries with competing claims in the area to reduce tensions and find a solution to their differences. Duterte announced his separation from the United States in October 2016. He also said the Philippines and China had agreed to work together. The two nations agreed to resolve their South China Sea dispute through talks. Duterte's efforts to work with China marked a major change in Philippine foreign policy. Duterte also said he might visit Thitu, the largest of the Philippine-controlled islands in the Spratly Archipelago. He said he would build housing for servicemen operating in the area. The island is close to Subi Reef. Subi is one of seven man-made islands in the Spratlys that China is accused of developing for its forces. Duterte said last month that there was no good reason to dispute China's activities on the man-made islands. "We cannot stop them because they are building it with their mind fixed that they own the place. China will go to war," he said. I'm Katie Weaver.
In less than 2 weeks, Turkish voters will decide whether to extend the powers of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. The constitutional referendum is set for April 16th. Public opinion studies show the vote will be close. Most television news channels in Turkey broadcast at least 3 campaign speeches a day in support of a yes vote on the presidential powers issue. The so-called no campaign gets only about 10% of the airtime that the yes vote gets. So the no campaign is turning increasingly to social media. But that comes with risks. Rights groups say prosecutors are targeting people who use social media to help the no campaign gain strength. Ali Gül is a law student in Turkey. He made an internet video that explained why people should vote no. The humorous video told of the dangers of putting too much power into one person's hands. At the end of the video, Gül asked, "Will I get arrested if this video is popular?" Gül's video spread quickly on social media. Days later, he published another video. In it, he said he knew he would soon be arrested. "But it is not important. I am not afraid," he said. "The children and youth of this nation deserve freedom and happiness, and not fear, imprisonment, and death." Gül was later arrested, but apparently not for the video. He was detained instead for Twitter messages the government says he wrote. The 2-year-old tweets were considered insulting to the president, a crime punishable by 3 years in jail. Gül denies writing the tweets, but his lawyers say he is likely to remain detained for many months as he waits for a trial. Gül is not alone. In the past 6 months, more than 2,500 people have been accused of insulting the president online. Observers say such risks are likely to remain as the Power Bill campaign comes to an end. I'm Ashley Thompson.
Britain officially informed the European Union, or EU, of its plans to leave the group last week. The move came at a time when Britain is involved in a heated dispute with the EU and Spain over the future of the British territory of Gibraltar. Many people think of Gibraltar as just a mountainous piece of land on Spain's southern coast. For years, it has been known as the Rock. Once part of Spain, Anglo-Dutch forces captured Gibraltar during the War of Spanish Succession in the early 1700s. Spain's rulers gave Britain control of the area in the Treaty of Utrecht. The Rock has been a source of tension ever since. Last week, the European Union published guidelines for negotiations between EU and British officials. The document states that any deal between the two sides won't affect Gibraltar unless Spain agrees to it. The EU's inclusion of Gibraltar angered many British lawmakers, but there is little they can do. That is the opinion of Andrew Kinesa, a Gibraltar expert at the University of Essex. Now that the UK is not in the EU, the EU will now defend its members' interests, he said. And in this case, the members' interests are Spain. And so Britain really doesn't have much of a way into that discussion. Last weekend, Britain held events to mark the 35th anniversary of the Falklands War. In 1982, Britain, under then Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, fought off an Argentine invasion of the Falkland Islands in the South Atlantic. To Argentinians, the islands are known as the Malvinas. Michael Howard is a former leader of Britain's Conservative Party. During the anniversary events, he said current Prime Minister Theresa May is prepared for a fight over Gibraltar. 35 years ago this week, another woman prime minister sent a task force halfway across the world to defend the freedom of another small group of British people against another Spanish-speaking country. And I'm absolutely certain that our current prime minister will show the same resolve in standing by the people of Gibraltar, Howard said. Yet on Monday, Prime Minister May chose calmer words to describe the situation. She told reporters, "What we are doing with all EU countries in the EU is sitting down and talking to them." May added that British policy on Gibraltar would not change. Spain's foreign minister, Alfonso Dastis, expressed surprise at the comments from Britain. Bringing into the debate events from the past like the Malvinas Islands is completely out of context, he said. Someone in the United Kingdom is losing their calm, and there is no reason for doing that. The future of Gibraltar's 30,000 occupants is not clear. 96% voted to stay in the European Union in Britain's vote on EU membership last June. I'm Phil Dierking.
Many people have been contacting United States offices around the world since the government's H-1B visa program for foreign workers opened on Monday. H-1B visas give American businesses permission to employ skilled foreign workers in the United States for 3 years. Many technology companies have used the program to fill job openings. This year, there are 85,000 visas available, 65,000 for people with a bachelor's degree from a college or university, and 20,000 visas for those with higher education. In recent years, there have been so many visa requests that the U.S. government stopped accepting them within a week. Visa winners are chosen through a computer-generated lottery system. This year, there is additional pressure because the program's future is not clear. President Donald Trump has said that he will not let foreigners holding H-1B visas displace U.S. workers. On Monday, the Department of Justice warned U.S. companies not to discriminate against American citizens. Tom Wheeler is Acting Assistant Attorney General of the Civil Rights Division. He said, U.S. workers should not be placed in a disfavored status, and the department is wholeheartedly committed to investigating and vigorously prosecuting these claims. At the same time, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services warned it will take a more targeted approach as its agents inspect businesses across the country. It promised to investigate companies with a high percentage of H-1B workers compared to U.S. citizens. It also plans to investigate employers who ask for permission to let H-1B workers perform their duties away from the traditional workplace. The Department of Homeland Security noted that 71% of H-1B visas were given in 2015 to people from India. That year, 10% were given to Chinese. Experts say India has such a high number because of the country's many outsourcing companies. Those businesses supply workers and services to other employers. Supporters of the H-1B visa program say there are not enough skilled American workers to fill all the positions for which skilled workers are needed. A group called New American Economy says there are persistent and dramatic worker shortages in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. The group is made up of American business leaders and city officials who support immigration reform. It reported that in 2016, there were 12 or more job openings in the STEM areas for every unemployed American worker. Some bills in the U.S. Congress expand the visa program. Others seek to limit it. I'm Kaveh Razai.
The National Zoo in Washington, D.C. has a lot of cute animals. The National Zoological Park is part of the world-famous Smithsonian Institution. This week, Smithsonian officials announced that 12 cheetahs were born last month at the zoo's research center in Virginia. They were born to two adult cheetahs named Mitty and Happy. Mitty actually had 7 cubs, but 2 did not survive. Each mother now has 2 male and 3 female cubs. The Smithsonian's Conservation Biology Institute in Virginia is not caring for cheetahs as a way to guarantee the arrival of more cute animals. The Institute's researchers are hoping to diversify the genetic code of cheetahs. The Cheetah Conservation Fund and the International Union for the Conservation of Nature say a large number of cheetahs died about 10,000 years ago. Those that survived eventually helped the population recover. but that caused what scientists call a population bottleneck. Of all the cheetahs alive today, many have the same or similar genetic qualities. That means many of the cheetahs suffer from the same problems. If there is a disease that spreads among the animals, many may die. That is why the Smithsonian and other organizations are breeding cheetahs. They are choosing mates with diverse genes. The effort is part of the Cheetah Species Survival Plan from the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. The zoo released a video of the 10 surviving cubs. Some were lying next to each other and breathing loudly. They have light faces with dark markings. The fur covering their small bodies is a mixture of light brown and dark brown, and it looks soft. The cubs will visit an animal doctor for the first time in just a few weeks. Until then, scientists are using a camera to observe their condition. Many people were excited to see them. On Twitter, the cheetah cubs were called adorable, awesome, and little cutie pies. I'm Dan Friedel.
Imagine you are watching an old American movie, the crime film Dirty Harry. You have heard that one part of the film is very famous in American culture. You watch the scene, which sounds like this.
You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
A sudden, strange thought comes to your mind. What is the purpose of the word well? You have heard different English speakers use the word in different ways, but you are not sure what it means. In our everyday grammar report, we will explore the common adverb well. We will show you how Americans use it while they are speaking. Do not fear. Unlike an unexpected meeting with Dirty Harry, this report will be painless.
Adverbs are one of the most difficult subjects in English grammar. They are difficult because they represent a large group of words that have different uses. In general, the definition of an adverb is this: a word that describes a verb, an adjective, another adverb, or a sentence. Adverbs are often used to show time, place, or a way of doing things. They can also show a degree or measurement of something. Consider the sentence, "I really like English grammar." The adverb "really" changes the meaning of the verb "like." The adverb "really" increases the force of the statement. There are also sentence adverbs. They limit or describe the meaning of an entire statement. Sentence adverbs also provide more information about the sentence. These are sometimes called conjunctive adverbs or discourse markers. Regardless of the name you choose to call them, the purpose is the same. They connect sentences in the same way coordinating conjunctions do, but they provide a different kind of information. Here is an example. Let's consider the statement, "I love English. However, I do not love English grammar." The word "however" is a conjunctive adverb that shows a contrast or comparison is coming. You can read more about words like these in an earlier Everyday Grammar story called Contrast and Concession.
Today, we are considering common conjunctive adverbs, or discourse markers, and how they are used in everyday speech. Let's go back to the word well. As you heard at the beginning of today's program, well can have a few different uses. The first use is to show a contrast or even a disagreement. Consider this line from the ending of the American film, Some Like It Hot.
But you don't understand, Osgood. I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
Here, the speaker uses well to show that a contrast is coming. The first speaker, the actor Jack Lemmon, expects the second person to become angry when he states he is not a woman, but a man. But Osgood reacts in an unexpected or contrasting way. He does not act surprised at all.
The second use of well is to show uncertainty, especially in answers. Consider this exchange between two friends.
Do you mind if I borrow $5?
Well, I'm not sure if I have any money with me.
In this example, the second speaker is a little slow in responding. The word well shows that she is not sure if she has the money. Or maybe she knows she has $5, but she does not want to say so. Whatever the case, the point is that well serves as a word that shows movement between the question and the answer. This transition shows that there is some uncertainty.
The third common use of well is to show a transition to the end of a conversation. Consider this example. Imagine you are in a business meeting and your boss makes the following statement.
Well, this meeting has been very productive.
In this case, the word well is showing a transition to the end of the meeting. Your boss is showing that he wants the meeting to end soon. In American culture, this is considered a careful, indirect way to end a conversation. However, if a speaker directs your attention to the word well, then the meaning changes. The statement can take on an angry, tense sound. Consider the difference between these two statements.
Well, this meeting has been very productive. Well, this meeting has been very productive.
The first statement is a respectful way to end a meeting. The second statement is a tense, perhaps angry way to bring a meeting to an end. If you heard the second statement in a business meeting, then you should know that something is wrong.
Well, I guess that is all for today's program. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
And that's all the time we have for today's program. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for joining us.